be okay down the back? Well, first of all, it's a great delight to be here with you tonight, and I'm in a very poetry mood after what has just occurred, and I think it's a great spirit reigns. Well, I've sort of danced around as a poet. I've written books on Greek mythology, two of them, one on Grimm's fairy tales, one on insects, and now I'm very much in birds and nature poetry. But I still like other things as well. So I'd like to start off with some birds and insects. And this one is called Macaws, and it was on a visit to Kuala Lumpur, where they have a wonderful bird park, and watching just a large group of macaws just sort of walk on the earth into their evening shelter. Here we go. So this is what parrots become when they let themselves go, allow excess to roost in their souls. Breasts in sunglasses strength saffron, blue wings an untidy archive of noon to first star, old jewellery box tarnish on ragged wedding train. Huddled in nitpicking love, they touch beak-coloured tongues, drape swathes of plumage against each other. In amplified propinquity, their pinions twitchy as radar. Jesters more than saints, yet at times a piercing probity, the hint of immutable intentions. Near dusk, a royal progress from perch to sequestered cage, a mobile bric-a-brac colonising a Victorian parlour that with shrieks that could wake the dead or scold them back to sleep. This gorgeous waddling into the dark, the light on their feathers undressed by it, zebra-lidded eyes noting you, the exotic, without condescension, wisely adapted, fantastically sane, lacking only a rainforest. Now, I turn to insects, and I've written one on the cockroach, as we know well, will survive us in certain scenarios, which I hope don't occur. I have addressed the cockroach in the first person. I'll just try with this. Cockroach. Blackly armoured as a dictator's funeral, art survivor so easily crushed with my foot. You die as you lived, without expression, squat body, fine carapace, fusing or sundering. I know a further million of you wait, the underground sea on which this house floats. While I was gone, you tracked each plate, pot, cup, dining on the ghosts of past meals. Invaded sealed crates of books, a ghostlier sustenance. Moving with the illusion of slowness, then cannily absent, you often subvert, outwit. Sometimes I find you in dreams or odd pockets of the self, just there as if to say, I cannot be transformed, kill me or endure me. Remember, nothing describes me but what I am. And don't write poems about me. this is Earwigs. It's a rather baroque poem, but the other poems I'll be reading will be simpler. Earwigs. Provenance of name unknown. Lost in some entomologist's periwig, or fallen from his ear trumpet into an inkwell. When needed, one could always be found in manuscripts, combing the fine print, leaving, if squashed, a messy signature. Unlettered bibliophiles, earwigs can feel secure between the most unnerving thoughts. Subversive quips are untroubled equally by the pedestrian and the soaring. Endowed with wings rarely used, pincers slow to take the point, they fare best in the great outdoors, investigating yellowed pages of Brussels sprouts, promoting life's general raggedness. To hold or behold them may not be pleasant, but they are quite unexceptionable. Forked tails curled up in meaningless threat. Should they create a society, build cities of fragments, promenade their young, we might find them interesting or endearing. But what they like is to bore small holes in things. Still, they know patience. Make devoted mothers, woven as we are into the world's substance. Now, just pick you over to a nature poem. I lived for a long time in a place called Barwon Heads on an estuary, of course, and I wrote a lot about that place, the river and the sea and the bird life and the vegetation. So that made me a nature poet. And this one is just standing on the bridge. And I think nature poetry is quite a challenge. I think there is a lot of new energy in nature poetry for obvious reasons. People are taking a fresh look, more urgent look in some ways. But and I'm particularly, I must put in a plug for a book that I found quite wonderful, which is called The Wild Spaces by Robert McPherson. And that's a wonderful example of nature writing. So this poem is called Winter Solstice. Later, little claws of rain will scratch at headlights as I walk home. Now, my body shaken by each car on the bridge, I watch the many-voiced flow that has become a locus of existence, a devotion. My life so small a thing before such power, while so reverberant itself, I can feel and name the state of light on skeined contours, net for others to consume a fish poem that carries the river's taste in its flesh. I drink the silence, eavesdropping on what dusk and daylight have to say to each other. The rain still soft, silk loosed from air's cocoon, the first stutter of carbines skimming the river.
Yeah, I'll just swap over here. Now.
I wanted particularly tonight to read, well, it's certainly a new book, so that's a good reason. I just kind of got it finished in time before coming to Ireland and getting it published just on the last minute. But it's based on a visit to Cork, not to Cork, to County Clare, 2 years ago. And I was riding in Tanker, which were the, as as you know, the seven-line Japanese form, or as we understand it in the West. And I found this was a very good vehicle for all kinds of things, portraits of birds, of atmospheres, events, and so on. So the haiku, I find, a very austere, wonderful form, very demanding, but I've sort of tried, or perhaps I've taken great liberties with the tanka form in terms of subject matter, but I find it a wonderfully pliant instrument form. The stone garden, one of the sections is about the burren, and so I'll start with that one. And the first poem is one that picks up the point about from the previous poem about scale, and one's very small in the scale of things, but one may feel connected and resonate with the whole. This is called The Cliffs at Pulsala, and you'd all be familiar with at least images, and some of you would have been there, of some of the large cliffs with the extraordinary grey stone in the burren, like forming large pavements. Some of them with cracks called grikes in them, which I'll come to in a moment, out of which wonderful vegetation grows. And for the geology of the region is very complex, and some of the plant life reflects both Arctic, Mediterranean and southern vegetation. The Cliffs of Pulsala. Count the burren stones, count leaves in a summer wood. Not godlike, not small. You walk on pavements, the grey of gull wings, pooled with blown spray. These vast platforms leave you alone with the clouds' furled secrets, slowly giving themselves away. Wind-poised hawks, the Atlantic, fallow then quietly fertile. Stone gardens, and I've got a quote here, in the burren, a very high degree of light is achieved by reflections from the sea and from the limestone. Rain-scoured, polished by glaciers, these slabs give back the watery light. Between them, hart's tongue ferns, moss, blue gentians, bloody crane's bill, and grike, which poem mentions the cast, which is some of the stones called cast. From its lush covert, a dove flies through stone lips, whirs upward, its plumage bearing the cast's earthen grey into an aureoled sun. Now I switch back to the opening, just read a few poems from here and there in the book. And the opening is set in a cottage in North West Clare, and it had a wonderful long view towards the coast. And so this is just the scene setting, first poem. The cottage sits in a meadow, silvered hemlock, buttercups, sorrel. To the north, barren country. South, east, west, pasture land, streams, clumped oaks, ash. And every morning the farmer, bachelor farmer in his 60s, would drive past in his tractor and give me away, we'd give each other away, eventually caught up with him. From the farmer, high on his tractor, each morning a wave. Stronger, so I thought, after our first exchange of words, steeped in the holy water of silence. Last night, the lamp off, we watched clouds, brute black barges drifting on the 10 o'clock light, gold at melting point, no moon, an owl's cry, summer gothic. Just see what One, I went to Tromore Wood, and that was a wonderful experience. And this one goes, it's called Woodland Trail. Lost, yes, but that meant I caught the lake by surprise. Its sequestered gleam, the way it was polishing, the smooth grey stones it has loved. Photograph. We superimpose our density on beauty. My amateur smile against the scuffed rock's sky flare. I tune my pulse to the wind. Rest. Silence does its work. Like a slowly raised vessel in a lock, I float on a brimming plane of light, poised for the fresh glide forward. Well, I'll just read a couple more, and then I just might have time to read a few fairy tale poems or something like that. This is still kind of on the contemplative theme, or very reflective, and it's about Scattery Island, out of Kilrush. And Scattery Island is quite close to the coast, but the point of the monastic settlement was to be away from ordinary life. On Scattery Island, among the monastic ruins, the coast in clear view, but they had the wild spaces, the tall seas, needed to quell the mind. Winds flailed, keened, their peace hard won, took root here. Finally, one about, it was just a wonderful coincidence that Martin Hayes was giving a concert when I stayed at this cottage, which was near Cushing, and he was still living in America then, and the local church had been made into quite a wonderful, wonderfully festive environment, and he was, Martin was in his joy with all his people. Church concert, Cushing. The music of Martin Hayes. On foot-worn marble, he outfiddles the devil. The listening body is stored with a composite silence. Down the nave, one breath. Now, you're my timekeeper. Well, when I wrote about stories from the Brothers Grimm, there was a story about six brothers, the princes who were transformed into swans. So it's a story that's cognate with the swan maid story. And their sister had to weave shirts out of little star flowers to throw over them to free them from the spell. But she had not been able to finish the sleeve of one of them, so that one of the brothers had a wing. And so I asked myself the question, what would that be like? The six shirts were finished, except for the one that still lacked its left sleeve. The moment the shirts touched them, their swan skins fell off, and there stood her brothers, strong and handsome. Only the youngest lacked his left arm and had a swan's wing in place of it. So I finished with this poem. A waterfall of feathers spills from his left shoulder. He's tempted to tilt his body sideways, limp, convulse his features, but finds with practice a measured stride, an expression half open, half closed, that will meet the situation. Wealthy enough to hire a tailor of genius, leisured enough to choose a life of letters, he slides a brocaded cuff across vellum, trailing feuilleton, odd gnomic poems, monocles to quiz moonlight, seed unearthly fires. Above sloped fingers, his quill embroiders air, stops, moves resolutely on. He has picked up the drop stitch of his first lost life. There will be lapses, eccentricities, of course. For one, he frequents the highest tower to see flocks pinwheel the sunset, fracture in storm, or swim through cloud surf, breasting noon's topaz. At such times, his eyes become dangerous jewels that fade to dullness when someone is sent to guard him. My, but that spectacle is ravishing. A sidelong glance, they reach such heights. Yes, he rejoins wearily, it is a long way down. But he's not tempted. If he feels a tremor of that winged life pass through him, his whole body unnerved, displaced from itself, as a great white shadow twitches and tingles, a thirst to be silvered by sunlight, to arrow through cobalt space above miles of conifers. Well, that is all so much rhetoric. His wing settles into his side like moulded parchment. It is only having two arms again would break him, and had he two wings, it would sadden. He'd be a homunculus bird, a lard-wrapped angel. He climbs the steps of the tower. It's midnight. The sky is a page of stars he can't write on, a compendium of invincible memories. Thank you.